Okay, we're learning the Seder Vayeshev, and also we have to remember that it's the a couple of days before Hanukkah, so we will mention that as well.
So you do the Hanukkah candles first, and then you do your Shabbat candles.
Yes, correct.
So therefore, Hanukkah,
and all of that has to be before 20 minutes before sunset.
It's got to be about round.
Well, Shabbos comes in this week, I think 3:33 or 3:32. So the Hanukkah candles have to be lit, say, at 3:20 to give you time to. Well, it's only one light, so it shouldn't take long. So 3:25, and then you light your Shabbos candles at 3:32. There are three brachas on the first night.
Three
brachas, yeah. Mahadlik Ner Chanukah. The first one is, you know, the full bracha, Asher Kedishonah, etc. And then Shasa Nisim Lavoseinu and Shechiyonu. It should be there in the leaflet. So three brachas the first night. And if you indeed light your Hanukkah menorah the first night and don't miss it, then you don't make the Shechiyonu again the rest of the festival. So the first night is Friday night, and the last night is Friday night.
If you do it the first night, it's enough.
If you do the Shechiyonu the first night, you do not say it again the rest of the eight days. Okay, we're now on the Seder Vayeshev.
Which one?
Page 68.
No, which one do you only say once?
Shechiyonu, the last of the three. That God has kept us alive.
First night only.
If you don't say it, you can't say it after, you've missed out.
If you didn't say it the first night, or you didn't light candles the first night, you started lighting.
You've forgot to say it.
If you lit but you forgot to say it, I think you say it on a subsequent night.
Oh, right.
Because it goes on the festival.
What about the second one?
The second one we say every night. So we say two brachas every night.
Can you say
and three the first
can
night?
Can you say it after Eloheinu Melech Ha'olam?
She'asa Nisim Lavaseinu Bayamim Ha'ein Bizman Hazet.
Can you say the first word again?
She'osa. She'osa. That he made. Referring to God. That he made Nisim, miracles.
We should do a miracle over here and get me a nice place to live.
Dolphin.
That would be a miracle, isn't it?
Dolphin and dolphin and dolphin, isn't that right?
Correct.
And to do your part.
So, where are we up to in the story? Last week, Sedra saw Jacob returning to the promised land, meeting his brother Esau. They came to some agreement to part company. Esau went on his way to Har Seir, which is the south of Israel. Jacob settled in Beersheba, which is where his father Yitzhak was there, still alive. Because he lived for quite a few more years, and in fact, although it mentions in last week's Seder that he'd already passed away, but nevertheless, he is still alive in this week's Seder. And the reason why that is possible is because the Chumash is not in historic order. This is a statement that the rabbis make in the Talmud of Ein Muktam Umeuchar Batera. There is no strict order of events in the Torah, meaning you can have a statement that an event took place and really it took place much later. And this is an example. In last week's Sedra, we have the statement that Yitzhak, Isaac, died, and yet in this week's Sedra, we know he's still alive when Yosef got sold down to Egypt. So it means that the statement in last week's Sedra, it sounds like it happened then, but it didn't actually happen then. Because dates, I mean, dates are very rarely given in the Chumash. So it doesn't say that Isaac died on such and such a day in such and such a year. It just says he died. So it's obviously something that has to be worked out as to when that actually was in terms of the calendar. We can do that because what the Torah does do is give us years. Not dates, but the years that a person lived.
Did they have that sort of a calendar structure?
That is a very good question as to whether they had a formal calendar. Yeah. We know for sure that they did have, in later years, when they got to the Promised Land, they did have a calendar, because there is a concept in Jewish law of what's called the date on a contract.
Because
a contract has to have a date.
If they were settled, it would make more sense, but while they were kind of in limbo and
But they would possibly adopt.
They wouldn't be keeping, a diary every day of what happened, so there was just a general...
Well, the indigenous populations amongst whom they lived, when they were in Egypt, I'm pretty sure that the Egyptians had some method of counting, because they had to specify the year that a pharaoh ruled and so on. I'm pretty sure calendars were around. Whether there was a Jewish calendar is questionable. But anyway, the Torah does give us the key to working out dates by giving us the ages that people live. So we have Adam being created at the very beginning, and we're told how long he lived. In other words, the age of his death. We're also told the age at which he had the children that he had. So we know how old he was when he had his first two, and we know how old he was when he had his third one, Seth, or Shace in Hebrew. And so it goes on. So we know how old Seth was when he had his son, and how old his son was when he had his son, and so on. So we can just add up the ages, and with that we'll get a date. And that's how we work out the age of the world, because Adam was created obviously on the sixth day of creation, and that is the beginning of time. So we know how old the world is, because we can add all the numbers together. So there are some key dates that we know, which is Abram was born in 1948, from creation. The flood was in 1656 from creation. Isaac was born in 2048 from creation. And Isaac. And Jacob was born in 2108 from creation. So we do know those ages. The ages of the sons of Jacob are more mysterious, because we're not actually given the age that Jacob was when he had each of his sons. So that we have to rely on rabbinic information in order to supply the ages of the various children of Jacob. So what order they were born and what difference in years there were. They were born very quickly, actually, in a very short space of time. Because don't forget, there were four mothers there, so they could be concurrent. Only Leah had six concurrent children, or seven, actually.
What, each year?
Pretty well. Yeah. Okay, so this is where we're up to. Jacob has returned to Israel, or as it was known then, in the land of Canaan. Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Midgure Aviv Be'eretz Canaan. Jacob dwelt in the lands of the sojournings of his father, but in the land of Canaan. As I say, not called the land of Israel until later.
How many wives did he have?
Four.
And that's the 12 tribes.
That is the 12 tribes plus one daughter. But according to rabbinic tradition, each of the boys was born with a twin sister. But they are not mentioned explicitly by name, but by implication. And Benjamin, the youngest, was born with two sisters. He was a triplet. So according to this, Jacob had 11 sons, with twin sisters, that's 22. One son with two sisters, that's 25. And one daughter on a, born on her own, that's Dina, that makes 26. 26 children, which is the numerical value of God's name, the four-letter name of God, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. So that is according to rabbinic tradition, and then we actually learn it out from this week's Sedra, because after Joseph was sold down to Egypt, and the brothers came back with their report that he had been attacked by a wild animal, because they brought his bloody shirt, his coat of many colours, which he'd been wearing, and they dipped it in the blood, so to show that he'd been killed. So it says that Jacob mourned and cried for him, and his sons and daughters arose.
He was
irreconcilable, yeah. He could not be comforted. But it says his sons and his daughters arose to comfort him. So Rashi immediately jumps on this and said, what do you mean daughters? In the text we only read of one daughter, and that was Dina in last week's Sedra. So they answer, Rashi answers in the name of the rabbis, that according to one opinion they all had these twins, and according to another opinion they didn't have twins, but this talking about Jacob's daughters-in-law. Because a daughter-in-law can be called
a daughter. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the reconciliation.
A daughter-in-law
can be called a daughter, just like a son-in-law, a daughter-in-law called their parents-in-law,
so
mom and dad.
Mean the wives of
daughter-in-law can be called
a daughter-in-law is a wife of a son.
Yeah. That.
So the parents, they can be called a daughter.
Right. No, I understand.
In terminology,
you're saying,
if you're close,
you're saying the wives of the sons.
Huh? That's what daughter-in-law normally means.
No, is what it could be referring.
Correct.
To.
Correct. Yeah. Okay, so Jacob has returned. Ela told us Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvaz Shana, Hayeroes Echov Batzon Vunas Bnei Vilna Vesmei Zilpa Meshe Aviv. These are the generations of Jacob, or the way Rashi learns it, these are the unfolding events in Jacob's life. Because here, it's not possible to say it's referring to children, because the word toldos means children, from the word laholid, to give birth to, but it also means events. So, events means happenings that happen in a person's life. And therefore, this is the meaning over here, because the text does not go on to give us a list of his children. It just mentions Joseph and his brothers in a more general way, and it cannot therefore be a list of the children, which it does do in other places. So therefore, it must be telling us the stories of Jacob, and this particular Sedra is about this, mainly about the story of Joseph, his relationship with his brothers, and the fact that they sold him down to Egypt as a slave, and his arrival in Egypt. Now, why should such a thing happen? Why?
They must have been jealous of that brother.
They were jealous of him because of his dreams.
Yeah.
But still, it's very extreme behavior to react in that way and sell their brother down as a slave. In fact, first of all, they were going to kill him. Yeah. You would surely agree that this is an extreme reaction.
Yeah.
And we're going to learn a little later as to why this actually happened, the divine reason why it happened. We know the human relationship reason why it happened.
He was to selfish them years later.
Correct. Very good. But in particular, the ultimate aim of it all was to get the Jewish people down to Egypt. Because God had appeared to Abram two generations before and in a vision that was called the Brisbane Absarim, in a prophetic vision that was called the Covenant Between the Pieces, during which God had informed Abram that his children are going to be slaves in a land which is not theirs for 400 years. And that 400 years turned out to be rather shorter. It was only 210 years. The 400 years was counted from the birth of Isaac. But this was a divine plan which God had for the Jewish people, the children of Abram, that they should land in a foreign land and be slaves there. And the foreign land that was chosen was Egypt. So now the problem is, how do you get Jacob to go down to Egypt? So the rabbis use a parable. They say, if you've got a sheep which has just had a lamb, and the sheep won't move out of its pen, it's penned up in a field, and they try and push the sheep out of the pen, it won't go. The sheep's obstinate, it won't leave the pen. How do you get the sheep to leave the pen? The answer is, take the lamb and put the lamb in the other field,
and it will follow.
And then the mother will follow the lamb.
This is the principle of what they were trying to do there.
Not they,
well, my mother,
but he, meaning God. He wanted Jacob to go down to Egypt.
So they would follow.
To get the tzaddik, the righteous Jacob, to go down to Egypt. Why should Jacob go down to Egypt? He's just been in exile for 20 odd years, 22 years. That surely is enough. Now he has to go to Egypt. The way to get him to Egypt is, he's the mother. He's the mother sheep. And Joseph is the lamb. So you get the lamb to go down to Egypt, then the sheep will go down to Egypt. So this is the method that God chose to get Joseph to go down to Egypt. You could say, well, why did he choose this method? He could have chosen another method. And the answer to that is, if he would have chosen another method, we would have asked on that other method, why didn't he choose this method? Whatever method God would choose, we would always have a question, why didn't he choose another method? The rabbis actually say that the method that he did choose was a very gentle method compared to another method that could have been used. And the rabbis say in the Medrash, Roy Hoyo Yaakov Loredes Lemitzrayim B'Shalshalor Shel Barza. Really, it would have been fitting for Jacob to be dragged down to Egypt in chains. Because this is God's decree, that Jacob has to go down to Egypt. And if it would mean dragging him in chains, so be it. But God, in his kindness, did it in such a way that Jacob would go down with great honor and dignity as the father of a king, and tremendously honored by Pharaoh. If he would have been dragged down in chains, that would have been rather ignominious.
And it was his prophetic, talents, which saved him, wasn't it?
Prophetic.
Dream interpretations.
With Joseph, you mean? Yeah. So that this Medrash is telling us that really God's method for getting Jacob down to Egypt was a very gentle and benign method. And a very, what we say in Hebrew, Yiddish, a bekovedik method. He was full of honor and glory. True, he suffered greatly by the fact that Joseph was parted from him for 22 years. And true, Joseph himself suffered greatly by the fact that he was part of the time he was a prisoner in a dungeon. But still, the net result of it was that Jacob himself went down to Egypt as the guest of a pharaoh, of a king, and treated like royalty. So let's get back to the theme of the story. So Joseph is 17 years old. He's a shepherd with his brothers, with the sheep. And also, he is a lad. Nar means a lad. What does it mean he's a lad? With the children of Bilhah and the children of Zilpah, the wives of his father. Now, there's a key here. Why is he associating with these four brothers of his? who are the children of maidservants.
Because they're his brother's cousins.
His brother's cousins?
No, half-brothers.
Yes, but they're his half-brothers as well.
Yes.
In Jewish law, in Jewish law, if children are the children of the same father,
they're brothers. They are.
They are full brothers.
They're brothers.
Half brothers is when they are children of two fathers and the same mother, which can happen if the first father dies and she remarries and has another child. So those children are called half children because they have two different fathers. In Jewish law, the lineage is determined by the father.
Really? I
thought not whether they're not whether they're Jewish. I never said that. Not whether they're Jewish or not. That goes according to the mother. The lineage within the Jewish people goes by the father. So the son of a Kohen is a Kohen. The son of a Levite is a Levite.
And the daughter.
And the son of an Israelite and a Yisrael is a Yisrael. But what happens if the mother is a Kohen, a Koheness, and the father's a Yisrael? Does the son have anything to do with being a Kohen?
No.
Because it doesn't follow the mother within the Jewish people. That's why I say in lineage it goes after the father. So two sons of one father, even if they have separate mothers, are full brothers.
So if the daughter is a daughter of a Kohen, she's a Bat Kohen.
She's a Bat Kohen, but she does not have any proper status, except that while she's in her father's house, she can eat the holy food, like Truma.
On the continent Kohn, C-O-H-N, that's our mother's name, K-O-H-N, that is Kohen, isn't it?
Probably.
Yes, so wouldn't make me Kohen?
No.
Why is it going according to the father?
This is said later on in the Torah that each tribe should go according to the house of their fathers. That's a statement.
If the man had several wives,
they'd all be in the same tribe.
Be of the same
so
father.
Then
the same father, the same tribe. Yeah.
So my brother. I mean, we're all Levites.
He's a Levite. Yeah.
How do you know?
You're called a Bas Levi, the daughter of a Levi, but the only effect on your life is that should you have a firstborn son, he would not have a pidyon haben. He would not have to be redeemed. You know, there's the redeeming of the firstborn. Well, the daughter of the son of a Levite woman and the son of a priest woman, a Kohenes, don't have a pidyon haben. They don't have a redemption of the firstborn. But that's basically nowadays the only difference.
My brother is a Levite. He's a Ben. And his children
are Levites. His sons?
They're not Jewish.
Then they're not Jewish at all. They're not Jewish. They're not Jewish. They're certainly not Levites.
Your name's Goldberg, so how can it be Levi? Oh, I see. It doesn't mean your name is Levi.
He's Ben Levi. Ben.
The surname has absolutely no bearing.
So how did you find that out?
Because that's his Aaron Ben Shimon Ben Abraham Halevi.
How do you find that out? The father knew.
It's handed down.
People don't always know, do they?
Yeah.
They don't always know. If you go to shul, if the man goes to shul, it will be known. Because he'll get an aliyah, and he'll be called up as a Kohen, as a Levi, as a Yisrael. And if they don't go to shul, then that's when the problems begin.
Yeah.
No.
So we can leave it so if you don't know, you're an Israelite.
Oh, if you don't know. I thought you said if you don't go to shul.
No.
If someone doesn't go to shul.
That's the problem. That is the problem with my family.
I don't know.
They lost the plot completely. Did we have any progress?
I saw him and we. I was just going to give him the thing and he disappeared.
I asked Rabbi Glick actually to find out from my father's side. Could he do that? Dates and everything, because he deals with Czech Republic. Maybe he could find out. I don't know how you do that. But
it's not going to affect your life very much.
No, but I'm interested to know.
Good.
What are you?
Okay, so we're getting back.
An Israel, I'm not in anything in particular.
Yes, you are.
Just an ordinary common Israelite.
Well, there's nothing ordinary or common about being an Israelite. It is a very, very exalted status.
Is that why I'm psychic and I get all these visions and things that come down from
because you're a Levite. I have no idea. So we're talking about the point of why Joseph is associating with his four brothers who are the children of the maidservants. It would imply from the text that he is associating with them, but his other brothers are not. The children of Leah did not have a good relationship, not only with Joseph, but also with the four brothers who were from the two maidservants. Now the reason for this is because these children of Leah took a view that they are fully fledged Jews. And therefore they also took the view that a maidservant has the full halachic status as a maidservant. In Jewish law, if a man has children from his maidservant, the children are not Jewish. They are slaves. Mm. A maidservant is a female slave. Mm. So the children of a slave are also slaves. So they maintained
that
these four brothers...
If he married her, it's slave.
It's just like marriage to a Gentile woman.
I see.
It's not something that's really allowed in Jewish law. And if it happens, then the children... For example, later on in the Chumash we're going to learn in the Seder Mishpatim how legitimately a Jewish man can date a Gentile woman under the following circumstances. If a Jewish man is sold as a slave to a Jewish master, and he's sold as a slave because he stole and he couldn't pay back the money, so he was sold as a slave to raise the funds to pay back the stolen goods. He's now a Jewish slave under the mastery of a Jewish master. The Jewish master has the right to give a Gentile slave woman, a maidservant, to this Jewish slave and to have children from her.
And the children
are slaves.
But they would never be Jewish.
And they're non-Jewish slaves.
But we don't have slaves anymore.
No, that's it.
That's irrelevant. We're talking about the law now. So this method tells us that if a Jewish man has children from a slave girl, the children are slaves. Non-Jewish slaves. So this is what the brothers maintained. They maintained that these four brothers of theirs were not fully fledged brothers, they're slaves. Mm. But Joseph said that this law of slavery, etc., does not yet apply because the Torah has not yet been given. These laws only begin, said Joseph, when the Torah was given. He said we're all basically Gentiles. We can behave as Jews, and they did behave as Jews. They took upon themselves all the Jewish laws. But they did not have the official status.
Hasn't been given them yet.
Well, we have discussed this many times. The Torah existed from even before creation. Because the Torah is the blueprint of creation. Yeah. Meaning that it says, Istakel b'raisa b'vora alma, that God looked into the Torah and created the world. So the rabbis use this analogy of an architect and the builder. The architect does the drawings, and then the builder looks at the drawings and builds the house according to the plans. So they say about the Torah is called diphtheros, which means plans, architectural drawings for the world. That God made his plans, and that's the Torah, and then he consulted what it's written in the Torah and did it in actuality. So the Torah existed before creation. It therefore existed obviously after creation. And we know that various aspects of Torah were known by the old ancient founders of humanity. Adam, the very first man, was told to be in the Garden of Eden, La'avda l'shamra, to guard it, to work it and guard it. So the rabbis say La'avda means the positive commandments, l'shamra means the negative commandments. Noah, let's take a very simple example of Noah himself.
Is it true?
He was told to take animals into the ark. How many?
Two.
That some of them were 2 by 2.
Two of each.
Two of each. Yeah. Which ones were 2 of each?
Kosher ones.
The treifa ones.
Yeah, 2 by 2.
What about the kosher ones?
One at a time.
He was told to take 7 by 7.
Oh, we heard the 2 by 2.
So now we have to ask the question: how did Noah know the difference between the kosher ones and the non-kosher ones? How would he have known that?
He knows the cloven hooves and his hands.
But how would he know if the Torah hadn't been given yet?
I guess.
That is the answer. So the Torah existed before the world was created. It existed after the world was created, and it was revealed to various tzaddikim along the way. And they were told many of the ideas of the Torah already. And so we have the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. The son of Noah and his great-grandson ran 2 yeshivas. And Abram learned there, and Isaac learned there, and Jacob learned there. So what were they learning? If the Torah hadn't been given yet? The answer is, there was Torah. So they were able to live their lives according to the ideals of the Torah before the Torah was given. And hence, there could be this argument between the brothers that Joseph says, you know, officially we're Gentiles, but we want to behave as Jews, so we'll behave as Jews. That's allowed and encouraged. The brothers said, no, we're Jews. And in which case, our brothers, the 4 sons of the 2 maidservants, are maidservants. And they didn't associate with them. They're inferior. But Joseph said, no, they're not inferior at all. We're all in the same boat. We're all equal. And that's one of the keys to this breakdown in relationship between Joseph and his brothers. This was the argument that we're going to read about shortly, but we've been beaten by the clock very shortly.
Is that why they wanted to do away with him?
That was partly why they wanted to do it. But the other reason, the other main reason was because...
Jealousy?
Jealousy over the dreams. Because, well, I'll read quickly because we're running out of time. We'll quickly read what happened. Jacob loved Joseph more than all his sons, for he was the son of his old age. Which in itself doesn't fully explain things, because Benjamin was even more a son of his old age, because he was born last. So if being the son of his old age was sufficient reason to love a son more than the others, he should have loved Benjamin more than Joseph. So we see that it's not just the fact that he was the son of his old age, because he wasn't uniquely so, but the truth is that there was a very deep soul relationship between Joseph and his father. One of the things that Rashi points out is that very similar events took place in both their lives. For example, Joseph's brothers hated him, Jacob's brother hated him, and so on. So there was a parallelism in their lives. But they were deeper than that. Jacob saw in Joseph the truth of the exalted nature of Joseph's soul. Because Hasidic teachings explain that Joseph was actually superior in soul power compared to his brothers. We'll finish off with this point. The jealousy was caused just ostensibly by the fact that Jacob favored Joseph, but there was good reason to favor him. Then he had his dreams purporting to say that he's going to rule over them. Well, that's not a way of engendering brotherly love. Hey folks, I'm the big one. I'm superior to you. I'm going to be the king.
It's not him.
It's easy for you to say that, but when you have siblings that lord it over you, that lord it over you, then you know what it means to be jealous of someone else, a sibling who is acting superior.
You
do, especially one that shows that he's superior.
He wasn't acting. He was just being. honest, and
being honest sometimes loses you friends.
And they were resentful. Mm. He wasn't.
Do you say everything honest to your friends?
Generally yes. That's why I'm not very popular.
He didn't say.
You have to be a bit diplomatic as well. Don't
he didn't say I'm greater than you.
He did by saying he's going to rule over them by dreaming dreams and telling them the dreams. Don't tell them. Who tells you to tell the dreams? Keep it to yourself.
Even in modern times, a lot of brothers and sisters can't be jealous.
That's right. Let's finish off with a point. I'll explain to you.
I have the same thing.
I love Martin, but I always said Martin was my mother's favourite.
My
brother and sister.
You know what I mean? I always thought that Martin was my mother's favourite.
The baby.
I always thought she had a special thing with Martin.
She was the youngest.
Dismissive.
You see?
Youngest.
And they don't respect
her. Maybe they're not on the same wavelength, so maybe just leave it alone.
I wasn't her favourite. I wasn't her mother's favourite at all.
He was quiet, wasn't he?
I'll finish up with this point. You're being recorded and you're going to be appearing on the internet.
We were children.
Let's just finish up the point. Why did Jacob see in Joseph this special relationship? And the Hasidic teachings explain as follows. The tribes, the children of Jacob, were all great tzaddikim, great righteous men. Albeit in the text we find that sometimes their behavior is questionable, they have rational explanations for everything they did.
Bad diet.
And therefore they were tzaddikim. But in the level of tzaddikim there are different levels. Within the category of tzaddikim, righteous men, there are different levels. So Hasidic teachings explain the brothers were shepherds. What is a shepherd? A shepherd is involved with his sheep and he's involved with solitude. He can be out in the countryside communing with God, and he's a tzaddik. He's praying to God, he's communing with God, he is in dveikus, he's attaching himself to God, very high spiritual life. But there's nothing that's challenging him. But if you have a tzaddik that is in the maelstrom of daily living, involved in running a country, he's like a king, he's a viceroy, there's political events going on, he's having to organize the whole country in terms of the food, etc. This is Joseph. Yeah. And he was just as attached to God and more, in spite of being in the middle of this tremendous turmoil. His brothers could not have maintained their spiritual levels had they been in that same kind of turmoil. And Jacob recognized this superiority of Joseph's soul. So much so that the rabbis say, and it's brought in Hasidic teachings, that in fact Joseph's soul was actually superior even to Jacob's soul. Which is an amazing statement, but this is nevertheless what is said. So here we see the seeds of the problem, that Joseph in reality was superior to his brothers. But because of various differences of opinion as to what their status really was, they couldn't agree, and they judged that he should get the death penalty basically because of his behavior. And that's why the story unfolded as it did.
Was he the assistant director, or was he...
Going back to what Ruby said,